This podcast is sponsored by Verizon Media. Download their white paper, Delivering the Future of Live Sports, to learn how to deliver a flawless streaming experience. Go to verizondigitalmedia.com/SBJ to download the white paper now.
With another Super Bowl in the books, we'll look at the week that was in South Florida as executive editor and publisher Abe Madcore and NFL writer Ben Fisher check in from Miami. Then I'm joined by Andy Lochnane, president of the white-hot Austin FC expansion franchise, which is putting up big numbers with still a year to go before its first MLS game, the subject of our cover story this week. We'll have those and whatever else comes up once we get talking here in the newsroom of Sports Business Journal. I'm Bill King, and this is First Look. We start the podcast this week in South Florida with this conversation between our Abe Madcore and Ben Fisher from the Super Bowl.
Hi, I'm Abe Madcore, executive editor and publisher of Sports Business Journal. I'm joined by my colleague, Ben Fisher, who is our NFL beat writer. Ben, you and I, it's Friday morning. We have been in South Beach in Miami now for a few days. Let's talk a little bit about just the overall sense of the mood and the logistics and the operation. We both know that for years, insiders were looking forward to a Super Bowl kind of normalcy, a Super Bowl back in Miami. How do you think it's done so far?
Well, I think it's definitely delivered what people had hoped for after a few cities that were chosen for new stadium reasons or other reasons than being classic destinations for major conferences or events. We're back in a place that has everything, you know, lots of flights, lots of luxury hotels, beaches, golf, sunshine, warm weather, all that. And it surely has delivered on that. It feels like a major event, but the downside of that is everyone's here and it's very crowded on the streets. It's slow getting around. So you take the good with the bad on that extraordinary demand.
Yeah, some of the people who I've talked to, some business partners having trouble getting players from one site to another site for their appearances or their sponsorship appearances. So those things have been a challenge. But by and large, it's going to get more and more busy like a Super Bowl normally does on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. But I do feel a sense that people are glad to be here. They love the warm weather. To your point, they love the general amenities and hospitality of South Beach.
Right. And there's no shortage of things to show your clients or your friends or to impress your family with down here. I know guys who are golfing today. You know, there's world-class restaurants all the way up and down the beach. And it's, you know, you can just walk out on the beach last night and see the sun go down and the moon come up. And it's just, it's a great scene. And everyone's making lots of money, too.
And they're doing business. So let's talk about business. One of the big items of business you and I have talked with everybody about is NFL labor. What are you hearing on that?
Well, everything and nothing at once, honestly, because the league and the union have both been very disciplined in keeping the negotiations at the table. That's sort of the standard line, and both sides have been keeping up with that. The standard takeaway from that is that both sides believe that a deal is possible, maybe not likely, but certainly possible, because if they're both being disciplined and not speaking out of turn, that means they think there's momentum at the table. And certainly we know that the league's business partners, the people sort of on the secondary or third circle outside of this, who aren't at the table but are talking to people who are, universally, they all expect the deal sooner rather than later. Very few sponsors, consultants, anybody else you might run into, seem to give much weight to the possibility of a protracted negotiation or even a work stoppage next year.
I've sat in a lot of NFLPA press conferences on that traditional Thursday of Super Bowl week. I found yesterday, remember we're taping this on Friday, I found Thursdays to be quite conciliatory and quite, you know, lack of news. And generally there's a little bit more antagonistic ire, but not this year. It does seem to me like there's a deal to be had. There's a deal close. Is it done? No. Could it implode over something? It could. But that's the sense that there is a pathway to a deal.
I think, and again, reading the tea leaves here, I think the union is cautioning people to the extent they do say anything that their rank and file is somewhat unpredictable. They say we are not 32 owners who have in some cases been doing business with each other for 40 years. We've got a rank and file of 1,900 people. We need a majority to enact any proposal we get. And they're young, they're new, there's a lot of turnover in that membership. And we might think we're close, but we're nowhere until our membership says we are. And I think that generally speaking, they're optimistic, but they want to make it clear to everyone, including the league, that they can't necessarily deliver just because there's a deal at the table.
Let's shift to other items, Ben, because you and I have talked to a lot of people, and there's a real sense of optimism around the NFL right now. They feel good about the state of the league. They feel good about the energy and the excitement and the programs and the leadership around the league. One of the items that people feel very good about is like the event here in Florida, Hard Rock Stadium. There's a lot of buzz about that renovated facility. Stephen Ross poured a lot of his own money into that building to make it back, to get it back on that Super Bowl rotation. Every league official and team official I've talked to so far, Ben, are raving about how Hard Rock could show on Sunday.
Yeah, that definitely tracks with what I've heard. The fact that those renovations are new just means the downside of what might go wrong operationally is very, very low. They're highly confident that everything is going to work well just because it's new. They love what's happened here at Hard Rock just in the last year in terms of building new tunnels and walkways above ground to keep traffic moving. It's a driver-centric. There is no public transit really to the stadium, so they're very excited to see how fast they can get people in and out. And the stadium is beautiful. Lots of luxury boxes and a lot of good things there.
And the ride share, it will be interesting on Sunday.
Right. In part because of the lack of public transit, they're expecting 10,000 ride share use cases on Sunday, which hard to say whether that's a record, but it's definitely a lot higher than any standard Sunday in the NFL. And they're, no one's really figured this out yet in general terms, but Uber and Lyft are manning their own lot, and it's going to be treated more like an airport than just the free-for-all that we're used to after games. So they're really hoping that everyone gets that car quickly and gets out of there.
You and I sat through Roger Goodell's press conference earlier in the week. Lack of major news is pretty much indicates the kind of tenor around the league right now. Everyone's looking at labor. Everyone's looking at media. You know, there were some other Rooney Rule player health and safety, of course. But right now, that seems to echo what we're hearing around the league in terms of people feeling pretty good about everything. Off-season issues to watch. I can tell you pretty much every conversation I've had over the last couple of days, one off-season issue to watch: where will Tom Brady play next year?
Right. And while we've been down here, you put out that cryptic tweet yesterday that no one knows quite what it means, but it wouldn't be too much of a stretch to infer that it's got some retrospective time to move on. There's some inflection point in his life. We may be completely making that up. He may be having a lot of fun with us by making us guess. But, I mean, the fortunes of several teams on and off the field turn around overnight if Brady signs anywhere but New England or walks away from the game altogether.
And it's been interesting to see the difference of opinions of people who, like, no, of course he's staying in New England, to, like, no, I know he's gone. So yeah. That's one story I'm watching. What are you watching in the offseason as we head post-Super Bowl?
Well, I'm sorry to be repetitive, but it's the union contract. I think they're in a really interesting spot now where there's either action in the next month or probably not for nearly another year. And this thing of this dynamic of going into March, a new league season, new NFLPA leadership elections, maybe delaying things entirely. It's just, it's hard to talk about everything else until we get through that or know what the long term is with that. So there's that, obviously. And then, you know, then we turn our eyes to the opening of SoFi Stadium in Los Angeles and Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. The NFL is putting an extraordinary amount of effort and thought into how to display those and take the wraps off those in the right way, even so far as the considering the wisdom of a Thursday night opener in LA, which would be at 5 p.m. in the heart of LA traffic on a Thursday night. That's the obvious place to put that game, but you might open that field with only 20% full because everyone's still in their cars then. So, you know, what do you do? How do you do a big show with that without getting into the West Coast problems with primetime? So they're thinking through every little detail on that.
And the commissioner was asked specifically about that during his press conference. Well, I'm leaving on Sunday morning, so I will not be at the game. You will be at the game. You're leaving Monday. You've got to give your prediction, even for your on-field prognostications.
Well, this is the talking point for everyone this year, that it is so pick 'em game, really. My sense of things is Chiefs narrowly. I think Mahomes at the end of the day is, you know, the better quarterback, usually wins these games. But, you know, we'll see early on in the first quarter if the Niners front seven can get in his face and make life difficult. They'll stick with him to the end. It's a close game either way, but I guess I give the edge to the gunslinger.
I'll take the opposite side. I'll give the edge to the defense. I'll go 49ers. I'll go 27-21.
And one other point about this matchup here is somebody said it last night, there's no villain in this. Everyone seems to be generally positive about these two teams.
Yeah,
and everyone's, all these conversations are like, You know, I'm happy for both of them. So that's a weird dynamic, honestly, after the last 10 years or so, too. So it'll be a happy Sunday for a lot of people.
Well, for Ben Fisher, I'm Abe Madcore from South Beach in Miami at Super Bowl 54. We'll talk to you again down the road.
I hope you're enjoying First Look. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to leave us a 5-star review to help others find this podcast. If you have any suggestions for the show or just want to say hello, feel free to send us an email at firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. That's firstlook@sportsbusinessjournal.com. Look forward to hearing from you. I remember a few years ago working on a large package that looked at what goes into a successful pro sports market, you know, size, economic heft that it takes to support one pro franchise or two franchises or three or four or even more. And I was floored by some of the numbers that we saw in Austin, Texas. The demos, the income, the growth rate, all just wow. And in some ways, Austin looks better than some existing two-team markets, and maybe even with some three-team markets. You dig deeper, there were some question marks. Austin, which for the last few years has been the largest U.S. market without a pro sports franchise, will gladly vacate that distinction at this time next year when Expansion Austin FC plays its first game in MLS. To talk about that and the jackrabbit start that franchise is off to on so many fronts, I'm joined now by Andy Lochnane, president of Austin FC. Andy, let's start with what it looks like on paper, if you will. Give me some perspective on what got owner Anthony Precourt and MLS so excited about Austin.
Well, thanks for having me, Bill. Austin's fun to talk about. Austin has certainly been viewed across the last decade, at least, as having untapped potential for Major League sports. The market dynamics and the market attraction are pretty hard to argue, as you hinted. And Austin FC's existence in and of itself is a fairly remarkable accomplishment. And Anthony, as you mentioned, and MLS's successful drive to bring Major League sports to Austin will be rewarded with what I would classify as a significant amount of pent-up demand inside of the market. So as it stands today, Austin, it is an incredibly attractive marketplace with incredible conditions. And when you factor the forecasted population and job growth that Central Texas is scheduled to experience across the next 20 years, and when you factor the key ingredients that you tend to see with successful MLS markets, there's a remarkable set of circumstances and a remarkable opportunity to build something special. And I think you're starting to see that. So you mentioned it, Bill. MLS viewed Austin as ripe territory. It is until next year. It's the largest market in North America without a playing Major League property. As you mentioned, that all changes. Austin's the only MLS club that stands as the one and only Major League team in its respective market. In your intro, you were talking a little bit about markets with one or two other Major League properties. Think about Nashville as an example. Nashville is a market size roughly the same exact size as Austin, both growing cities, both attractive markets. Austin will have one and only Major League property. Nashville will have an NFL team and an NHL team as its competition. And there's something to be said about that. But you know, we're proud that we're the one and only Major League team in our respective market across MLS. I could keep going. Austin's growth, it's unrivaled. It's the fastest growing large city in the United States.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty easy to see why Austin has consistently ranked as one of the top cities to live in the U.S. When you're here for a couple of days, I think you can fall in love with it. I mean, the culture is, it's pretty incredible. It's warm. It's diverse. It's vibrant. And I think, with UT in the background, there's a pretty strong pipeline of creative talent that want to stay in the city when they graduate. And Austin, it ranks as a top city to start a business. It's affordable, and when we talk about where it's at today, it's roughly 2.2 million in the MSA, and forecasts would suggest that, in 20 or so years, the marketplace will be closer to 4 million. And I think that's pretty meaningful for a new Major League property. And then I think I love the fact that you talked a little bit about that, one, two, three team markets. When we think about our place in the league, we'd be adjusted for, if you take population per pro sports team and you adjust that for just pure population or market, we rank number one in the league. We rank number one in the league for households, for TV population, for radio population, companies with $50 million or greater in annual revenues. There's a lot to be said about those adjusted marketplace ranks. And, you know, it's good that we're standing at number one and we started to see some of those early successes.
And first mover advantage is huge. I mean, that's been a lesson in so many sports. I think we just saw in Las Vegas with the NHL. We've seen it in so many places over the years with the NBA. I think that you anticipated that first mover advantage. Tell me a little bit about living it, particularly now as you've opened the doors and begun the sales process and really are selling out of like everything, right?
We're off to a good start, knock on wood. I think first mover advantage is something we've evaluated in advance. We think about what it could look like if we are sustainably successful for, you know, the first 5 years of our life. Listen, we are in no way in the same stratosphere as the San Antonio Spurs. I mean, we happen to be geographically adjacent, but when we think about the Spurs, it's an aspirational brand. They had first mover advantage. They then were able to create sustainable success with on-court performance, and their business has remained very healthy, and they are revered in their community for all the right reasons. They've invested in the community, and they've backed it up with on-court product. That's something that we look to when we think about first mover advantage. I think, again, we're a long way from even being in that same conversation, but it's something aspirationally, it's pretty relevant. Yeah, I mean, you talked about some of our early success. We've gone live with our season ticket deposit platform. We'll break the news. We're at 40,000 deposits, continue to collect deposits every single day. We've started to sell what we classify as our ultra premium products, things like suites, loge boxes, field seats. Those are all sold out, apart from those that we're sort of strategically holding back for sponsorships. And we just started the sales process for our club seats, and those are going at a very brisk pace. So the early signs on the ticketing side have been what we would classify as overwhelmingly positive. And on the sponsorship side, the trajectory is a little longer in the way of sale and buildup, but early signs would suggest that we will be able to meet what is sort of our internal overall objective, and that's to be a top five team in sponsorship categories.
Which is striking, you know, when you consider so many of those things that people anticipate going in, and they look at things like market size, and they look at things like number of Fortune 500 companies, and they look at, you know, and when I say Fortune 500, not companies, but headquarters, all those sort of things that make you wonder, that next layer of can Austin work, those early indicators, I think it sounds like are fairly strong, right? I mean, tell me a little bit about that, because that was one of the things when you looked at Austin and you said, I'm not sure. When I was talking earlier on and I said, there were a couple of things. One of those things was, you know, Fortune 500 headquarters, which there's, I believe, two. Fortune 1000 is not a lot more than that, but certainly you have lots of major employers. When it comes to sponsors, suites, premium product, all those places where those metrics become important, How did you set a strategy for that? What were your expectations, and what have you seen?
So I think we've known that from a pure headquarters perspective, yes, Austin does not sit atop those lists, but it's not necessarily problematic. In fact, I would argue there's probably some instances where you could look at markets where there is a disproportionately high number of Fortune 1000 companies, and that doesn't necessarily produce instant success. You can view it at both ends of the spectrum, but Austin is a significant office location for most major corporations. You're starting to see it, especially in the tech industry. The entities that have a significant and growing presence in Austin, I mean, essentially, Amazon HQ2 was this very public process of finding their second headquarters. Well, clandestinely, Apple was doing the same at the same time. And shortly after the HQ2 announcement for Amazon, Apple announced that they're making Austin their second home. And I think those are some of the layers that we, of course, have to factor in addition to just pure corporate headquarters. That aside, we're building a stadium and a set of products that are very tailored for things like mid-size company and entrepreneurial investment. So we know that ultimately speaking, hospitality isn't about building the Palace of Auburn Hills with 200 suites. That's not where MLS's trajectory is at a 20,500 seat stadium where we're targeting is something more like 27 suites, which is right sized for the sport, right sized for the market. And we're also introducing several what we would classify as mini suite products. So our load boxes account for things like a large entrepreneurial base, a large mid-size base. And so I think we've built a strategy that accounts for, there's not necessarily this large base of Fortune 500 companies. But again, I'll point this out, that does not mean that you will be guaranteed to be successful if something like that exists in your market.
Tell me a little bit about the stadium. What should people look for? What's going to make it a little different? And when you think again about what makes it a fit for Austin, how'd you guys design for that?
So the stadium is meant to take inspiration from the city that it will call its home. So I think for first and foremost, things like the textures, the materials, those are very deliberately chosen to reflect Austin. Things like climate decisions is a pretty important part of any stadium environment. But
yeah, it's a little toasty there, isn't it?
It can get warm in Austin, undeniably. And we have the benefit of being able to reflect on what Houston and Dallas have done in our league, in our state. And I think if we think about major investments in stadium, climate's a big one. So our roof size will be roughly 2.5 times that of the roof in Houston, or 5 times greater than the roof in Dallas. And that's relevant because, you know, the roof can provide coverage from the sun. I think we also had the benefit of understanding what those stadiums look like in terms of airflow circulation. So we've deliberately designed a stadium that has open corners to allow for natural air circulation. You won't see that, for example, in Houston. They're sort of as an enclosed environment. And we've also invested in these new seats that you're starting to see come in baseball primarily.
Yeah.
These breathable mesh seat products that, so for example, you talk about the warmth in Austin. If Austin in the summer is on average, you know, anywhere between 90 and 100 degrees, pretty customary during the day, a seat like that would, a typical stadium seat with their typical stadium seat materials would cook to about 160 degrees during peak sun.
Right. The one that burns the back of your legs.
Yeah. Right. It happens. What this new seat, this breathable mesh seat product has done is that on that same warm day, that same 90 to 100 degree day, instead of it being 60 to 70 degrees greater than the actual outdoor temp, it's more like 5 degrees higher than the actual outdoor temp. That's a pretty significant difference, and obviously an investment we find valuable to improve climate. But we're putting in 4,000 of those seats on the Lower East Side. So Lower East Side in most any stadium in the world typically would be built with sun facing exposure in the afternoon and the evening. So we've made that as an offset investment. And I think one last thing, just on the stadium front, deliberate design decisions. We wanted to build something that had access to air conditioning. 25% of the stadium at least will have access to air conditioning. We also wanted to create these really special indoor-outdoor environments because that's what Austin's about. Austin is about enjoying the outdoors, and the market would demand us to have outdoor club spaces. So we've got something pretty unprecedented. It's an indoor-outdoor club that we're really fond of.
So that's the stadium. Another big piece of this, obviously, is stadium location. And I think for me, that was a real eye-opener as I came to understand Austin a little bit. Because I have to tell you, the first thing that I thought when I heard of where you guys were talking about putting the stadium, I thought that is so not MLS 2.0 or 3.0 or whatever .0 we're on right now that has this league on an upward trajectory. When you think about that downtown location, this is not that traditionally. But when you start to understand Austin a little bit, maybe that's okay. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, the stadium location is the exact center point of the metro population. So the downtown, as most would know it, is south of the center point of the metro population. But where our stadium is, so for your listeners, stadium is in a location which we would just sort of affectionately call the Domain. And the Domain is also the second downtown for Austin. It's about 9 miles north of the downtown that most who have visited South By or Austin City Limits would be familiar with. It's a vibrant part of the community. It is by no means a rural a peripheral suburb. It is a mass of retail, commercial, and residential. It's also the most accessible part of the city, just given the way that the highway infrastructure has been built out. So if you really like the Domain today, you love it in 5-10 years when there's additional households, there's additional retail, there's additional commercial activity. I mean, there's not a week that goes by where a major company doesn't announce the addition of incredible office investments in the Domain proper. It's something that you kind of pinch yourself at each day, but truthfully, there are towers upon towers that are scheduled to be built with office in and around our area. And there's also rail improvements that are going to happen in and around our area. So there's essentially the equivalent of a light rail line that runs from downtown north towards our stadium. And there's the train tracks literally run immediately adjacent to the stadium site. And the hope is that we'll have a stadium train stop added that will allow passengers to get off and walk 50 feet to the stadium gates.
Last thing I wanted to touch on with you, and that is, you know, while I spent time there, I was, you know, I was fortunate enough to spend time with the mayor, spend some time with some other people who are of Austin, very much understand Austin, and they pridefully throw around the keep Austin weird. They like the weird is part of the Austin brand. It's a big part and it's real. What did that mean both for getting a team there, getting a stadium built there, and what's it going to mean to have success there? How is this? There's one thing to look at Austin on paper and say, oh, look at all these demos. And then there's another thing to drill down and figure out how are we going to make it work here? Again, shadow of UT, all those other things that go into it, keep Austin weird. Give me some texture on what you guys have learned about this place and whether it's really different.
So keep Austin weird is real. And I think we would view that in hopefully not necessarily in our sort of foremost business decisions on how we can be weird, but we do recognize that from a design perspective, people aren't necessarily looking for perfect squares, perfect rectangles. From a texture perspective, from a food and beverage perspective, from the way that our supporter culture will evolve. I think there's this incredible, by the way, we should highlight this. Like, our supporters existed before the team existed and have helped us get this far. Supporter culture can thrive on uniqueness, and that's already here inside of Austin. I think that's one of the reasons why we're successful. Austin is also a very tech savvy market. You mentioned UT. I mean, let's think about it. So UT, which is this incredible behemoth, right? UT is the number one revenue producing athletic department in the country. And I think it has been consistently for the last couple of years.
Anybody who says there's no pro sports in Austin, I would point to the 100,000 people in the football stadium and the, what is it, 30, 40, 100? It's way more than that. The basketball arena that's under construction.
So yeah, the basketball facility is, I think it's slated to, you know, open shortly after our stadium. Yeah, it's going to be a state-of-the-art indoor arena that only bolsters UT's prowess and position. But, you know, as the number one revenue athletic department in the country, they are enjoying the same benefits of Austin's growth that we are. And I think maybe a point there is, you know, Austin, I didn't mean to get away from your question, but if you think about the opportunity to be successful inside of our market, yes, they'd be like three NFL teams, quite possibly. They're enjoying the growth of Austin. Their revenues are growing. So are ours. And I think we've, in a very short period of time, demonstrated that not only can our business be successful, but we can work together with UT. I mean, I've got incredible respect for what Chris Del Conte has accomplished in his first few years. And, you know, they've of course, over a lifetime have significantly contributed to the community, and they've made Austin investments. And I think they've paved the way for us. And also, frankly, they've blessed us and we have their support, which is very, very important. And in exchange, we've got an academic partnership in place. We've built out talent pipelines in terms of internships and entry-level jobs are being set up. And, you know, our sporting director, Claudio Reina, is connected with Ange Kelly, who's their head coach. There's a lot of, let's call it, joint partnerships that are in process. There's nothing formal on paper. And then, dare I say, you talked about, you know, Austin, keep Austin weird. It's authenticity. There's probably nobody who's more authentic at Austin than Matthew McConaughey. And Matthew serves as both Minister of Culture for UT as well as for Austin FC. And I think, you know, his shared interest in seeing both properties succeed and coexisting is significant in the way that we operate our business. But listen, Austin is weird. Austin is also this incredible tech forward city. You know, like any market in the US, you're seeing a shift away from hardwired cable to broadcast and shift to digital platforms. And no market, I think this is important, no market has digitally adapted and adopted cord cutting and streaming in a way that Austin has. I think Nielsen, I'm pretty sure you probably want to fact check me on this, but I'm pretty sure Nielsen came out last year and said that Austin is the number one streaming market in the US. And I think cord cutting is the reason why Austin is the 40th largest TV market in the US, but it's the 30th largest metro area in the country. I don't think there's another city that has that type of discrepancy, and I think that's fairly explainable. I mean, Austin is tech savvy.
Lot of interesting stuff going on out there. A market everyone will be watching, a franchise everyone will be watching. And I can't, Andy, I gotta do this. I'm sorry, I have to. I can't end a conversation without Austin. You're the one who brought up McConaughey. I would have later anyway, but you brought him up. So I get to say, all right, all right, all right.
Just keep living. Thanks, Bill.
I'm sure that gets thrown around a little bit.
It does. It's, but you know what? He's part of our DNA. And I think even Matthew will say that when it's time for Major League Soccer to be played in his hometown.
You want to say it? Go ahead.
All right. All right. All right.
There you go. All right. Andy Lochnane, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks, Bill.
That's going to do it for this week. For Abe Madcore, Ben Fisher, and our producer, Chris Mason, I'm Bill King, and this has been First Look.